she was able to get over the eating disorder. It took about a half a year. At one point, it was so awful that she was down to under 90 pounds, and she looked like a ghost. But she pulled out of it and reached the point barely where she could cling to life. I went to see her almost every day, talking with her, encouraging her, doing whatever I could to keep her going. After a year away from college, she managed to return to school. Why do you think she developed an eating disorder? It's quite simple. She wanted to stop having periods, Ari said. Extreme weight loss stops you from having periods. That's what she was hoping for. She didn't want to ever get pregnant again, and probably didn't want to be a woman anymore. She wanted, if possible, to have her womb removed.
Sounds pretty serious, Tsukuru said.
It was very serious. That's why the only thing I could do was cut you off. I felt really bad for you. And believe me, I knew how cruelly I was treating you. For me, it was especially hard not to be able to see you again. It's true. I felt like I was being ripped apart. Like I said before, I really liked you.
Ari paused, gazing at her hands on the table as if gathering her feelings, and then she went on.
But I had to help Yuzu recover. That had to be my highest priority. She had life-threatening issues she was dealing with, and she needed my help. So the only thing I could do was make you swim alone through the cold night sea. I knew you could do it. You were strong enough to make it.
The two of them were silent for a time. The leaves on the trees outside rippled in the wind. Tsukuru broke the silence.
So Yuzu recovered and graduated from college. What happened after that?
She was still seeing a counselor once a week, but was able to pretty much lead a normal life. At least she didn't look like a ghost anymore. But by then she was no longer the Yuzu we used to know.
Ari took a breath, choosing her words.
She had changed, Ari finally said. It's like everything had drained out of her heart, like any interest in the outside world had disappeared. She no longer cared much about music. It was painful to see. She still enjoyed teaching music to children, though. That passion never left her. Even when her condition was at its worst, when she was so weak she could barely stand up, she managed to drag herself once a week to the church school where she taught piano to kids. She kept on doing that volunteer work alone. I think the desire to continue that project was what helped her recover. If she hadn't had that work, she might never have made it.
Ari turned around and gazed out the window at the sky above the trees. She faced forward again and looked directly at Tsukuru. The sky was still covered with a thin layer of clouds.
By this time, though, Yuzu didn't have that sense of unconditional friendship toward me that she'd had when we were younger. She said she was grateful to me for everything I'd done for her. And I think she really was. But at the same time, she'd lost any interest in me. Like I said, Yuzu had lost interest in almost everything. And I was part of this almost everything. It was painful to admit. We'd been best friends for so long, and I really cared about her. But that's the way it was. By then, I wasn't indispensable to her anymore.
Ari stared for a while at an imaginary spot above the table, and then spoke.
Yuzu wasn't Snow White anymore. Or maybe she was too worn out to be Snow White. And I was a bit tired myself of being the Seven Dwarfs.
Ari, half unconsciously, picked up her coffee cup, then returned it to the table.
At any rate, by then our wonderful group, the group of four, minus you, couldn't function the way it had in the past. Everyone had graduated from school and was busy with their own lives. It's an obvious thing to say, but we weren't high school kids anymore. And needless to say, cutting you off left behind emotional scars in all of us. scars that weren't superficial.
Tsukuru was silent, listening intently to her words.
You were gone, but you were always there, Eri said.
Once more, a short silence.
Eri, I want to know more about you, Tsukuru said. What brought you to where you are now? That's what I'd first like to know.
Eri narrowed her eyes and tilted her head slightly.
From my late teens until my early 20s, Yuzu had me totally under her sway. One day I looked around me and realized I was fading. I'd been hoping to get work as a writer. I always enjoyed writing. I wanted to write novels, poems, things of that nature. You knew about that, right?
Tsukuru nodded. Eri had carried around a thick notebook, always jotting down ideas when the urge came over her.
But in college, I couldn't manage that. Taking care of Yuzu constantly, it was all I could do to keep up with my schoolwork. I had two boyfriends in college, but not much came of it. I was too busy spending time with Yuzu to go on dates very often. Nothing worked out for me. One day I just stopped and asked myself, what in the world are you doing with your life? I had no goals anymore, and I was just spinning my wheels, watching my self-confidence disappear. I know things were hard for Yuzu, but you have to understand that they were hard for me too.
Eri's eyes narrowed again, as if she were gazing at some distant scene.
A friend from college asked me to go to a pottery class, and I went along, kind of as a lark. And that's where I discovered what I'd been searching for after so long. Spinning the potter's wheel, I felt like I could be totally honest with myself. Focusing on creating something helped me to forget everything else. From that day on, I've been totally absorbed in pottery. In college, it was still just a hobby. But after that, I wanted to become a full-fledged potter. I graduated from college, worked part-time jobs for a year while I studied, then re-entered school, this time in the industrial arts department. Goodbye novels, hello pottery. While I was working on my pottery, I met Edvard, who was in Japan as an exchange student. Eventually, we got married and moved here. Life is a total surprise sometimes. If my friend hadn't invited me to the pottery class, I'd be living a completely different life now.
You really seem to have a talent for it, Tsukuru said, pointing to the pottery on the shelves. I don't know much about pottery, but I get a wonderful feeling when I look at your pieces and hold them.
Eri smiled. I don't know about talent, but my work sells pretty well here. It doesn't bring in much money, but I'm really happy that other people need what I create.
I know what you mean, Tsukuru said, since I make things myself. Very different things from yours, though.
As different as stations and plates.
We need both in our lives.
Of course, Eri said.
She thought about something. The smile gradually faded from her lips.
I like it here. I imagine I'll stay here for the rest of my life.
You won't go back to Japan?
I've taken Finnish citizenship, though, and have gotten a lot better at speaking the language. The winters are hard to get through, I'll admit that, but then it gives me more time to read. Maybe I'll find I want to write again. The children are used to Finland now and have friends here. And Edvard is a good man. His family's good to us, too, and my work is going well.
And you're needed here.
Eri raised her head and looked fixedly at Tsukuru.
It was when I heard that Yuzu had been murdered by somebody that I decided I could stay here the rest of my life. Ao called and told me. I was pregnant with my older girl then, and couldn't attend the funeral. It was a terrible thing for me. I felt like my chest was about to be ripped apart, knowing that Yuzu had been killed like that, in some unknown place, and that she'd been cremated and was nothing more than ash. Knowing that I'd never see her again, I made up my mind then and there that if I had a girl, I'd name her Yuzu, and that I'd never go back to Japan.
So your daughter's name is Yuzu?
Yuzu Kurono Hatainen, she said. A part of Yuzu lives on, in that name, at least.
But why did Yuzu go off by herself to Hamamatsu?
She went there soon after I moved to Finland. I don't know why. We wrote letters to each other regularly, but she didn't tell me anything about the reasons behind her move. She simply said it was because of work. But there were any number of jobs she could have had in Nagoya. And for her to move to some place she'd never been before and live all alone was the same as committing suicide.
Yuzu was found inside her apartment in Hamamatsu, strangled to death with a cloth belt. Tsukuru had read the details in old newspapers and magazines. He'd searched online, too, to find out more about the case. Robbery wasn't involved. Her purse, with cash still in it, was found nearby. And there were no signs she'd been assaulted. Nothing was disturbed in her apartment. And there were no signs of a struggle. Residents on the same floor had heard no suspicious sounds. There were a couple of menthol cigarette butts in an ashtray, but these turned out to be Yuzu's. Tsukuru had frowned at this. Yuzu smoked. The estimated time of death was between 10 p.m. and midnight, a night when it rained till dawn, a cold rain for a May night. Her body was discovered in the evening, 3 days later. She had lain there for 3 days, on the faux tile flooring of her kitchen. They never discovered the motive for the murder. Someone had come late at night, strangled her without making a sound, not stolen or disturbed anything else, and then left. The door locked automatically. It was unclear whether she had opened it from the inside or if the murderer had a duplicate key. She lived alone in the apartment. Co-workers and neighbors said she didn't seem to have any close friends, except for her older sister and mother who occasionally visited from Nagoya. She was always alone. She wore simple clothes and struck everyone who knew her as rather meek and quiet. She was enthusiastic about her job and was well-liked by her students, but outside of work, she seemed to have no friends. No one had any idea what had led to her death, why she had ended up strangled. The police investigation petered out without any suspects coming to light. Articles about the case grew steadily shorter and finally vanished altogether. It was a sad, painful case, like cold rain falling steadily until dawn.
An evil spirit possessed her, Eri said softly, as if revealing a secret. It clung to her, breathing coldly on her neck, slowly driving her in a corner. That's the only thing that can explain all that happened to her. What happened with you? Her eating disorder, what happened in Hamamatsu? I never actually wanted to put it into words. It's like, if I did, it would really exist. So I kept it to myself all this time. I decided to never talk about it until the day I died. But I don't mind telling you this now, since we'll probably never see each other again. And you need to know this. It was an evil spirit, or something close to it. In the end, Yuzu couldn't escape.
Eri sighed deeply and stared at her hands on the table. Her hands were visibly shaking rather severely. Tsukuru turned his gaze away and looked out the window, past the fluttering curtain. The silence that settled on the room was oppressive, full of a deep sadness. Unspoken feelings were as heavy and lonely as the ancient glacier that had carved out the deep lake.
Do you remember Liszt's Years of Pilgrimage? Yuzu used to play one of the pieces a lot, Tsukuru said after a time to break the silence.
Le Mal de Paix. I remember it well, Eri said. I listen to it sometimes. Would you like to hear it?
Tsukuru nodded. Eri stood up, went over to the small stereo set in the cabinet, selected a CD from the pile of discs, and inserted it into the player. Le Mal de Paix filtered out from the speakers, the simple opening melody, softly played with one hand. Eri sat back down across from him, and the two of them silently listened to the music. Listening to the music here, next to a lake in Finland, it had a different sort of charm from when he heard it back in his apartment in Tokyo. But no matter where he listened to it, regardless of whether he heard it on a CD or an old LP, the music remained the same, utterly engaging and beautiful. Tsukuru pictured Yuzu at the piano in her parlor, playing the piece, leaning over the keyboard, eyes closed, lips slightly open, searching for words that don't make a sound. She was apart from herself then, in some other place. The piece ended. There was a pause. Then the next piece began. The Bells of Geneva. Eri touched the remote control and lowered the volume.
It strikes me as different from the performance I always listen to at home, Tsukuru said.
Which pianist do you listen to?
Lazar Berman.
Eri shook her head.
I've never heard his version.
It's a little more elegant than this one. I like this performance. It's wonderful, but the style of this version makes it sound more like a Beethoven sonata than Liszt.
Eri smiled.
That would be because it's Alfred Brendel.
Maybe it's not so elegant, but I like it all the same. I guess I'm used to this version, since it's the one I always listen to.
Yuzu played this piece so beautifully. She put so much feeling into it.
She really did. She was very good at pieces this length. In longer pieces, she sort of ran out of energy halfway through. But everyone has their own special qualities. I always feel like a part of Yuzu lives on in this music. It's so vibrant, so luminous.
When Yuzu was teaching the children at the school, Tsukuru and Ao usually played soccer with the boys in the small playground outside. They divided into two teams and tried to shoot the ball into the opposite goal, which was usually constructed from a couple of cardboard boxes. As he passed the ball, Tsukuru would half listen to the sound of children playing scales that filtered out the window. The past became a long, razor-sharp skewer that stabbed right through his heart. Silent, silver pain shot through him, transforming his spine to a pillar of ice. The pain remained unabated. He held his breath, shut his eyes tight, enduring the agony. Alfred Brendel's graceful playing continued. The CD shifted to the second suite, second year, Italy. And in that moment, he was finally able to accept it all. In the deepest recesses of his soul, Tsukuru Tazaki understood. One heart is not connected to another through harmony alone. They are instead linked deeply through their wounds. Pain linked to pain. Fragility to fragility. There is no silence without a cry of grief, no forgiveness without bloodshed, no acceptance without a passage through acute loss. That is what lies at the root of true harmony.
Tsukuru, it's true. She lives on in so many ways.
Eri's voice, from the other side of the table, was husky, as if forced from her.
I can feel it in all the echoes that surround us, in the light, in shapes, in every single.
Eri covered her face with her hands. No other words came. Tsukuru wasn't sure if she was crying or not. If she was, she did so silently. While Ao and Tsukuru played soccer, Eri and Aka did their best to keep the other children from interrupting Yuzu's piano lessons. They did whatever they could to occupy the kids. They read books, played games, went outside and sang songs. Most of the time, though, these attempts failed. The children never tired of trying to disrupt the piano lessons. They found this much more interesting than anything else. Eri and Aka's fruitless struggle to divert them was fun to watch. Almost without thinking, Tsukuru stood up and went around to the opposite side of the table. Without a word, he laid his hand on Eri's shoulder. She still had her face in her hands. As he touched her, he felt her trembling, a trembling the eye couldn't detect.
Tsukuru?
Eri's voice leaked out from between her fingers. Could you do something for me?
Of course, Tsukuru said.
Could you hold me? Tsukuru asked her to stand up, then drew her to him. Her full breasts lay tightly against his chest, as if testimony to something. Her hands were warm where she held his back, her cheek soft and wet as it pressed against his neck.
I don't think I'll ever go back to Japan again,
Eri murmured. Her warm, damp breath brushed his ear. Everything I see would remind me of Yuzu. And of our... Tsukuru said nothing, only continued to hold her tightly against him. Their embrace would be visible through the open window. Someone might pass by and see them. Edvard and his children might be back at any moment. But that didn't matter. They didn't care what others thought. He and Eri had to hold each other now as much as they wanted. They had to let their skin touch and drive away the long shadow cast by evil spirits. This was no doubt why he'd come here in the first place. They held each other for a long time. How long he couldn't say. The white curtain at the window went on flapping in the breeze that came from across the lake. Eri's cheeks stayed wet, and Alfred Brendel went on playing the Second Year Italy suite. Petrarch's Sonnet 47, then Petrarch's Sonnet 104. Tsukuru knew every note. He could have hummed it all if he had wanted to. For the first time, he understood how deeply he'd listened to this music, and how much it meant to him. They didn't speak. Words were powerless now, like a pair of dancers who had stopped mid-step. They simply held each other quietly, giving themselves up to the flow of time. Time that encompassed both past and present, and even a portion of the future. Nothing came between their two bodies, as her warm breath brushed his neck. Tsukuru shut his eyes, letting the music wash over him as he listened to Eri's heartbeat. The beating of her heart kept time with the slap of the little boat against the pier. Chapter 17. They sat back down again, across from each other at the table, and took turns opening up about what was in their hearts. Things they had not put into words for ages, things they'd been holding back deep in their souls. Removing the lids on their hearts, pulling open the doors of memory, revealing honest feelings, as the other all the while listened quietly. Eri spoke first.
In the end, I abandoned Yuzu. I had to get away from her. I wanted to get as far away as I could from whatever it was that possessed her. That's why I got into pottery, married Edvard, and moved to Finland. I didn't plan it, of course. It just turned out that way. I did sort of have the feeling that doing so meant I'd never have to take care of Yuzu again. I loved her more than I loved anyone. She was like another self. So I wanted to help her as much as I could. But I was exhausted. Taking care of her for so long had completely worn me out. And no matter how much I tried to help her, I couldn't stop her retreat from reality. It was awful for me. If I'd stayed in Nagoya, I think my mind would have started to go too.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just making excuses.
You're just saying how you felt. That's different from making excuses.
Eri bit her lip. But the fact remains that I abandoned her. And Yuzu went by herself to Hamamatsu and was murdered. She had the most slender, lovely neck, do you remember? Like a pretty bird, the kind of neck that could snap so easily. If I'd been in Japan, that probably would never have happened to her. I would never have let her go off to some town she didn't know, all by herself.
Perhaps. But even if it hadn't been then, the same thing might have happened later, in some other place. You weren't Yuzu's guardian. You couldn't keep watch over her every second of every day. You had your own life. There's only so much you could have done.
Eri shook her head. I told myself that. I don't know how many times. But it didn't help. A part of me wanted to get far away from her, to protect myself. I can't deny that. Apart from the question of her being saved or not, I had to deal with my own conflict. And in the process, I lost you too. In giving priority to the problems Yuzu had, I had to abandon Tsukuru Tazaki, who had done nothing wrong. I wounded you deeply, all because it suited the situation as I saw it, even though I loved you so much. Tsukuru didn't say a word.
But that's not the whole story, Eri said.
No?
Truthfully, I didn't abandon you just because of Yuzu. That's a superficial justification. I did it because I'm a coward. I didn't have any confidence in myself as a woman. I was sure that no matter how much I loved you, you would never reciprocate. I was sure you were in love with Yuzu. That's why I was able to cut you off so cruelly. I did it to sever my feelings for you. If I had only had a little more confidence and courage, and no stupid pride, I never would have abandoned you like that, no matter what the circumstances. But something was wrong with me back then. I know I did something terrible, and I am truly sorry for it.
Silence descended on them.
I should have apologized to you a long time ago, Eri finally said.
I know that very well, but I just couldn't. I was too ashamed of myself.
You don't need to worry about me anymore, Tsukuru said. I survived the crisis, swam through the night sea on my own. Each of us did what we had to do in order to survive. I get the feeling that even if we had made different decisions then, even if we had chosen to do things differently, we might have still ended up pretty much where we are now.
Eri bit her lip and considered this.
Will you tell me one thing? She said after a while.
Name it.
If I had come right out then and told you I loved you, would you have gone out with me?
Even if you'd said that right to my face, I probably wouldn't have believed it, Tsukuru said.
Why not?
I couldn't imagine anyone saying they loved me or wanting to be my girlfriend.
But you were kind, cool, and calm, and you'd already figured out your path in life. Plus, you were good-looking.
Tsukuru shook his head.
I have a really boring face. I've never liked my looks.
Eri smiled.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you really do have a very boring face, and something was wrong with me. But at least for a silly 16-year-old girl, you are handsome enough. I dreamed about how wonderful it would be to have a boyfriend like you.
Can't claim to have much of a personality either.
Everyone alive has a personality. It's just more obvious with some people than with others. Eri's eyes narrowed, and she looked straight at him.
So, tell me, how would you have replied?
Would you have let me be your girlfriend?
Of course I would have, Tsukuru said. I really liked you. I was really attracted to you, in a different way from how I was attracted to Yuzu. If you had told me then how you felt, of course I would have loved for you to be my girlfriend. And I think we would have been happy together.
The two of them would have likely been a close couple, with a fulfilling love life, Tsukuru decided. There would have been so much they could have shared. On the surface, their personalities seemed so different. Tsukuru, introverted and reticent. Eri, sociable and talkative. Yet they both shared a desire to create and build things with their own hands, things that were meaningful. Tsukuru had the feeling, though, that this closeness would have been short-lived. An unavoidable fissure would have grown between what he and Eri wanted from their lives. They were still in their teens then, still discovering their own paths, and eventually they would have reached a fork and gone off in separate directions. Without fighting, without hurting each other, naturally, calmly. And it did turn out that way, didn't it? Tsukuru thought, with him going to Tokyo and building stations and Eri marrying Edvard and moving to Finland. It wouldn't have been strange if things had worked out that way. It was entirely possible. And the experience would never have been a negative one for either of them. Even if they were no longer lovers, they would have remained good friends. In reality, though, none of this ever happened. In reality, something very different happened. And that fact was more significant now than anything else.
Even if you are not telling the truth, I'm happy you would say that, Eri said.
I am too telling the truth, Tsukuru said. I wouldn't joke about something like that. I think we would have had a wonderful time together, and I'm sorry it never happened. I really am.
Eri smiled, with no trace of sarcasm. Tsukuru remembered the erotic dream he often had of the two girls. How they were always together, but how it was always Yuzu whose body he came inside. Not once did he ejaculate inside Eri. He wasn't sure of the significance, but he did know he couldn't tell Eri about it. No matter how honestly you open up to someone, there are still things you cannot reveal. When he thought about those dreams, and Yuzu's insistence that he had raped her, and her insistence that she was carrying his baby, he found he couldn't totally dismiss it out of hand as some made-up story, or say that he had no idea what she was talking about. It might have all been a dream, but he still couldn't escape the feeling that, in some indefinable way, he was responsible, and not just for the rape, but for her murder. On that rainy May night, something inside of him, unknown to him, may have slipped away to Hamamatsu and strangled that thin, lovely, fragile neck. He could see himself knocking on the door of her apartment.
"Can you let me in?"
he says in this vision.
"I have something I need to say."
He's wearing a wet black raincoat, the smell of heavy night rain hovering about him.
"Tsukuru?"
Yuzu asks.
"There's something I need to talk with you about," he says. "It's very important. That's why I came to Hamamatsu. It won't take long. Please, open the door."
He keeps on addressing the closed door.
"I'm sorry about showing up like this without calling. But if I had contacted you beforehand, you probably wouldn't have seen me."
Yuzu hesitates, then quietly slips the chain off the lock. His right hand tightly grips the belt inside his pocket. Tsukuru grimaced. Why did he have to imagine this horrid scene? And why did he have to be the one who strangled her? There were no reasons at all why he would have done that, of course. Tsukuru had never wanted to kill anyone, ever. But maybe he had tried to kill Yuzu, in a purely symbolic way. Tsukuru himself had no idea what deep darkness lay hidden in his heart. What he did know was that inside Yuzu too lay a deep inner darkness, and that somewhere, on some subterranean level, her darkness and his may have connected. And being strangled was, perhaps, exactly what Yuzu had wanted. In the mingled darkness between them, perhaps he had sensed that desire.
"You are thinking about Yuzu?" Eri asked.
"I have always thought of myself as a victim," Tsukuru said, "forced for no reason to suffer cruelly, deeply wounded emotionally, my life thrown off course. Truthfully, sometimes I hated the four of you, wondering why I was the only one who had to go through that awful experience. But maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe I wasn't simply a victim, but had hurt those around me, too, without realizing it, and wounded myself again in the counterattack."
Eri gazed at him without a word.
"And maybe I murdered Yuzu,"
Tsukuru said honestly.
"Maybe the one who knocked on her door that night was me."
"In a certain sense," Eri said. Tsukuru nodded.
"I murdered Yuzu too," Eri said. "In a sense." She looked off to one side. "Maybe I was the one who knocked on her door that night."
Tsukuru looked at her nicely tanned profile. He'd always liked her slightly upturned nose.
"Each of us has to live with that burden," Eri said.
The wind had died down for the moment, and now the white curtain at the window hung still. The boat had stopped rattling against the pier. The only thing he could hear was the calls of birds, singing a melody he'd never heard before. Eri listened to the birds for a while, picked up the barrette, pinned her hair back again, and gently pressed her fingertips against her forehead.
"What do you think about the work Akai's doing?" she asked.
Like a weight had been removed, the flow of time grew a fraction lighter.
"I don't know," Tsukuru said. "The world he lives in is so far removed from mine, it's hard for me to say whether it's good or bad."
"I certainly don't like what he's doing, but that doesn't mean I can cut him off. He used to be one of my very best friends, and even now I still consider him a good friend, though I haven't seen him in 7 or 8 years.
She put her hand to her hair again.
"Every year Aka donates a large sum of money to that Catholic facility that supported the school where we volunteered. The people there are really grateful for what he does. The school is barely managing financially, but nobody knows he's donating. He insists on remaining anonymous. I'm probably the only person besides the people who run the school who knows he's donating so much. I found out about it just by chance. You know, Tsukuru, he's not a bad person. I want you to understand that. He just pretends to be bad, that's all. I don't know why. He probably has to."
Tsukuru nodded.
"And the same holds true for Ao," Eri said. "He still has a very pure heart. It's just that it's hard to survive in the real world. They've both been more successful than most in their different fields. They put in a lot of honest, hard work. What I'm trying to say is, it wasn't a waste for us to have been us. The way we were together as a group. I really believe that. Even if it was only for a few short years."
Eri held her face in her hands again. She was silent for a time, then looked up and continued.
"We survived, you and I. And those who survive have a duty. Our duty is to do our best to keep on living, even if our lives are not perfect.
The most I can do is keep building railroad stations."
"That's fine. That's what you should keep doing. I'm sure you build very wonderful, safe stations that people enjoy using."
"I hope so," Tsukuru said. "We're not supposed to do this. But when I'm overseeing construction for one section of a station, I always put my name on it. I write it in the wet concrete with a nail. Tsukuru Tazaki, where you can't see it from the outside.
Eri laughed.
So even after you're gone, your wonderful stations remain, just like me putting my initials on the back of my plates.
Tsukuru raised his head and looked at Eri. Is it okay if I talk about my girlfriend?
Of course, Eri said.
A charming smile rose to her lips.
I'd love to hear all about this wise older girlfriend of yours.
Tsukuru told her about Sara. How he had found her strangely attractive from the first time he saw her, and how they made love on their third date. How she had wanted to know everything about the group of friends he'd had in Nagoya. How when he saw her the last time, he'd been impotent. Tsukuru told Eri about it all, hiding nothing, about how Sara had pushed him to visit his former friends in Nagoya and travel to Finland. She had told him that unless he did so, he'd never overcome the emotional baggage he still carried. Tsukuru felt he loved Sara, and he thought he would like to marry her. This was probably the first time he'd ever felt such strong emotions about someone. But she seemed to have an older boyfriend. When he saw her walking with him on the street, she had looked so happy, so content, and he wasn't sure he could ever make her that happy. Eri listened intently and didn't interrupt. Finally, she spoke.
You know, Tsukuru, you need to hang on to her, no matter what. I really believe that. If you let her go now, you might not ever have anyone else in your life. But I don't have any confidence.
Why not?
Because I have no sense of self. I have no personality, no brilliant color. I have nothing to offer. That's always been my problem. I feel like an empty vessel. I have a shape, I guess, as a container. But there's nothing inside. I just can't see myself as the right person for her. I think that the more time passes, and the more she knows about me, the more disappointed Sara will be, and the more she'll choose to distance herself from me. You need to have courage, and be confident in yourself. I mean, I used to love you, right? At one time I would have given myself to you. I would have done whatever you wanted me to do. An actual hot-blooded woman felt that strongly about you once. That's how valuable you are. You're not empty. Not at all.
I appreciate you saying that, Tsukuru said. I really do. But that was then. What about now? I'm 36. But when I think about who I am, I'm as confused, or maybe more confused, than I've ever been. I can't figure out what I should do. I've never felt this strongly about anybody before.
Let's say you are an empty vessel. So what?
What's wrong with that? Eri said.
You're still a wonderful, attractive vessel. And really, does anybody know who they are? So why not be a completely beautiful vessel? The kind people feel good about. The kind people want to entrust with precious belongings.
Tsukuru understood what she was getting at. But whether or not this applied to him was another question.
When you get back to Tokyo, Eri said, tell her everything. Being open and honest is always the best way to go. But don't tell her you saw her with that other man. Keep that to yourself. There are some things women don't want other people to see. Besides that, tell her everything you're feeling.
I'm scared, Eri. If I do something wrong, or say something wrong, I'm scared it will wreck everything and our relationship will vanish forever.
Eri slowly shook her head.
It's no different from building stations. If something is important enough, a little mistake isn't going to ruin it all, or make it vanish. It might not be perfect, but the first step is actually building the station, right? Otherwise, trains won't stop there, and you can't meet the person who means so much to you.
If you find some defect, you can adjust it later as needed. First things first, build the station. A special station just for her. The kind of station where trains want to stop, even if they have no reason to do so. Imagine that kind of station, and give it actual color and shape. Write your name on the foundation with a nail, and breathe life into it. I know you have the power to do that. Don't forget, you're the one who swam across the freezing sea at night.
Eri asked him to stay for dinner.
They catch big, fresh trout around here. We just fry them up with herbs in a frying pan, but they taste wonderful. We'd love to have you stay and eat with us.
Thank you, but I'd better be getting back. I want to get to Helsinki while it's still light out.
Eri laughed.
Still light out? This is summer in Finland. It's light out almost the whole night.
I know, but still, Tsukuru averred.
Eri understood how he felt.
Thank you for coming all this way to see me, she said. I can't tell you how happy I am that we could talk like this. I really feel like a great burden has been lifted, something that's been weighing me down forever. I'm not saying this solves everything, but it's been a huge relief.
I feel the same way, Tsukuru said.
Talking with you has helped a lot. And I'm happy I could meet your husband and daughters, and see what sort of life you're living here. That alone made the trip worthwhile.
They left the cabin and walked over to where his Volkswagen Golf was parked. Slowly, deliberately, as if weighing the significance of each step, they hugged each other once more, and this time she didn't cry. He felt her gentle smile on his neck, her full breasts pressed against him, filled with the vitality to keep on living. Her fingers against his back were strong and real. Tsukuru suddenly remembered the presents he had brought from Japan for her and the children. He took them out from his shoulder bag in the car and handed them to her. A boxwood barrette for Eri, and Japanese picture books for the children.
Thank you, Tsukuru, Eri said. You haven't changed at all. You are always so kind.
It's nothing, Tsukuru said.
And he remembered the evening when he bought the presents, seeing Sara walking down Amaterasu with that other man. If he hadn't thought to buy the presents, he wouldn't have witnessed that scene. It was a strange thing.
Farewell, Tsukuru Tazaki. Have a safe trip home,
Eri said as they said goodbye.
Don't let the bad elves get you.
Bad elves?
Eri's eyes narrowed, her lips curling mischievously like in the old days.
It's a saying we use a lot here. Don't let the bad elves get you. So many creatures have lived in these forests since olden times.
Understood, Tsukuru laughed. I'll keep an eye out for them.
If you get the chance, Eri said, let Aul and Aka know that I'm doing well here.
I will.
I think you should go see them sometimes, or get together, all three of you, for your sake and for theirs.
I agree. That might be a good idea, Tsukuru said.
It'd be good for me, too, Eri said, even though I can't be with you.
Tsukuru nodded. Once things settle down, I'll make sure to do that. For your sake, too.
But it's strange, isn't it?
Eri said. What is?
That amazing time in our lives is gone and will never return. All the beautiful possibilities we had then have been swallowed up in the flow of time.
Tsukuru nodded silently. He thought he should say something, but no words came.
Winter here is really long, Eri said, gazing out at the lake, sounding as if she were addressing herself far away. The nights are so long and it seems never ending. Everything freezes solid, like spring will never come. All sorts of dark thoughts come to me, no matter how much I try to avoid them.
Still no words came to him. Tsukuru silently followed her gaze to the surface of the lake. It was only later, after he boarded the direct flight back to Narita, and had buckled his seatbelt, that the words came. The words he should have said. The right words always seemed to come too late. He turned the key and started the engine. The four-cylinder Golf engine awoke from its short sleep and slowly found its rhythm.
"Goodbye," Harry said. "Be well, and make sure you hold on to Sara. You really need her."
"I'll try."
"Tsukuru, there's one thing I want you to remember. You aren't colorless. Those were just names. I know we often teased you about it, but it was just a stupid joke. Tsukuru Tazaki is a wonderful, colorful person. A person who builds fantastic stations. A healthy 36-year-old citizen. A voter. A taxpayer. Someone who could fly all the way to Finland just to see me. You don't lack anything. Be confident and be bold. That's all you need. Never let fear and stupid pride make you lose someone who's precious to you."
He put the car into drive and stepped on the gas. He stuck a hand out the open window and waved. Eri waved back. She kept on waving, her hand held high. Finally, she disappeared in the trees. All he saw in the rear-view mirror now was the deep green of a Finnish summer. The wind seemed to have picked up again, and small waves rippled on the surface of the lake. A tall young man in a kayak appeared on the water, slowly and silently, slipping through the water like some gigantic whirligig.
"I'll probably never be back here again," Tsukuru thought, "and never see Eri again. We each have our paths to follow, in our places. Like Ao said, there's no going back."
Sorrow surged then, silently, like water inside him. A formless, transparent sorrow. A sorrow he could touch, yet something that was also far away, out of reach. Pain struck him, as if gouging out his chest, and he could barely breathe. When he reached the paved road, he steered the car to the side, switched off the engine, leaned against the steering wheel, and closed his eyes. His heart was racing, and he took slow, deep breaths. And as he inhaled, he suddenly noticed a cold, hard object near the center of his body, like a hard core of earth that remains frozen all year long. This was the source of the pain in his chest and the difficulty breathing. He had never known until this moment that such a thing existed inside him. Yet it was this pain and this sense of being choked that he needed. It was exactly what he had needed to acknowledge, what he had needed to confront. From now on, he had to make that cold core melt, bit by bit. It might take time, but it was what he had to do. But his own body heat wasn't enough to melt that frozen soil. He needed someone else's warmth. First, he had to get back to Tokyo. That was the first step. He turned the key and started the engine again. On the road to Helsinki, Tsukuru prayed that Eri wouldn't be caught by any bad elves of the forest. All he could do at this point was pray.
Chapter 18. Tsukuru spent the remaining 2 days of his trip wandering the streets of Helsinki. It rained occasionally, just a light sprinkle that didn't bother him. As he walked, he thought of many things. There was much he needed to consider, and he wanted to gather his thoughts before he returned to Tokyo. When he got tired of walking or of thinking, he'd stop by a cafe and have a coffee and a sandwich. He got lost, not knowing where he was, but that didn't bother him either. Helsinki wasn't a huge city, and streetcars ran everywhere. And for him right now, losing sight of where he actually was felt good. On his last afternoon in the city,
he went to Helsinki Central Station, sat on a bench, and watched the trains come and go. From the station, he called Olga on his cell phone to thank her.
"I found the Hartainen's house all right," he told her. "And my friend was definitely surprised to see me. And the Hamenlina was a beautiful town."
"That's great," Olga replied. "Wonderful." She seemed genuinely happy for him.
"I'd like to take you out to dinner to thank you," he said.
"I appreciate the invitation," Olga said. "But today is my mother's birthday, and I'm having dinner with my parents at home. But please, be sure to tell Sara hello from me."
"I will," Tsukuru replied. "And thank you for everything."
In the evening, he had seafood and half a glass of chilled chablis at a restaurant that Olga had recommended near the harbor. As he sat there, he thought about the Hartainens. Right now, the four of them must be seated around their table. Was the wind still blowing on the lake? And what was Eri thinking about at this very moment? The warmth of her breath still grazed his ear. He arrived back in Tokyo on a Saturday morning. He unpacked, took a leisurely bath, and spent the rest of the day busy with random tasks. As soon as he got back, he thought of calling Sara, and had actually picked up the phone and dialed her number. But then he put the phone down. He needed more time to think. It had been a short trip, but so many things had happened. It still felt unreal to be back in the middle of Tokyo. It felt like just a short time ago he'd been beside the lake in Hamenlina, listening to the transparent sound of the wind. No matter what he said to Sara, he needed to choose his words carefully. He did the laundry, glanced through the newspapers that had piled up, then went out before evening to shop for food, though he had no appetite. Probably because of jet lag, he got terribly sleepy while it was still light out, lay down in bed at 8:30, and fell asleep, only to wake up before midnight. He tried reading the book he'd started on the plane, but his mind was still a blur, so he got up and cleaned the apartment. Just before dawn, he returned to bed, and when he awoke, it was almost noon on Sunday. It looked like it was going to be a hot day. He switched on the AC, made coffee and had a cup, with a slice of toast and melted cheese. After he took a shower, he phoned Sara's home. The phone went to voicemail. "Please leave a message after the beep," the message said. He hesitated, then hung up without saying anything. The clock on the wall showed that it was just after 1. He was about to call her cell phone, but thought better of it. She might be having lunch on her day off with her boyfriend. It was a little early for them to be making love. Tsukuru recalled the man he had seen her with, walking down Omotesando hand in hand. He couldn't wipe the picture from his mind. He lay down on the sofa, images buzzing through his head, when suddenly it felt as if a sharp needle had stabbed him in the back, a thin, invisible needle. The pain was minimal, and there was no blood, probably. Still, it hurt. He pedaled his bike to the gym and swam his usual distance in the pool. His body remained oddly numb, and as he swam, he felt like he fell asleep a couple of times. Of course, no one can swim and sleep at the same time. It just seemed that way. Even so, as he swam, his body moved on autopilot, and he was able to finish without any further thoughts of Sara or of that man going through his mind. For that he was thankful. He came home from the pool and took a 30-minute nap. It was a deep, dreamless sleep, his consciousness switching off as soon as his head hit the pillow. Afterward, he ironed a few shirts and handkerchiefs and made dinner. He grilled salmon with herbs in the oven, drizzled lemon over it, and ate it with potato salad. Tofu and scallion miso soup rounded out the meal. He had half a cold beer
and watched the news on TV. Then he lay down on the sofa and read. It was just